The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Beyond and hello and welcome to... we should shut the door.
Keep that in.
That's got to stay in.
There's all these animals keep coming. There's rats and bats. There's a possum got in and died yesterday.
I shot a crow and it dropped me some pesetas at least. I got some pesetas from the crow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to IGN's number one podcast that was raised in a barn, apparently. The door was wide open. All sorts of animals could have come or gone in that time. Anyway, I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined by Brian Altano.
What are we, air conditioning the whole neighborhood?
Get a load of this door. And Jada Griffin.
Electricity doesn't grow on trees, Max. Didn't your mother tell you that?
In Avatar, it does. Anyway.
I like that we all just went to things that our parents said to us growing up. Right?
So we're off to a good rickety start, which is good because we're going to be talking about all sorts of rickety death contraptions in Resident Evil 4, which is finally out. We've all played a ton of it. We've been wanting to talk about this for quite some time. It's a very good game. If you haven't played it and you don't want to hear anything about it, I'm sorry. You should probably go do something else for the next 51 minutes. But yeah, first, let's talk about something that is tangentially related to Resident Evil 4. One of the platforms it will be coming to is PlayStation VR 2, which we got word this morning is not selling so great so far.
Right.
According to Bloomberg, there was research from IDC that says they're expecting to sell 270,000 units by the end of March, which on its own is like a pretty, you know, that's a substantial number.
Mm-hmm.
But for, I think, what Sony was hoping for, that's not so hot. I think we heard a while back that they were aiming to produce 2 million PSVR 2 units to be sold, presumably by the end of March. I mean, they always want to sell, you know, shoot for the sky or whatever, aim for the moon. But yeah.
Land in some space video game.
Yeah.
Have you opened your PSVR 2 yet?
You bought it. You supported it.
I did. I bought it. I supported Sony. I bought it as more of a future investment. I got to demo a little bit with our test unit that we got sent.
Sure, yeah.
But honestly, I've been so busy with the other stuff that it's been really hard for me to want to open the box and really invest my time into PSVR 2.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, GDC was last week, which I was at. So, like, I was like, I'm about to take vacation in a couple weeks, so I'll definitely have some time to dive in. No,
dog ate
sure.
my homework.
Yeah, like, you know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. The dog ate my homework, and you know,
that
kind of
power
went out.
Like there was a decent launch lineup there, but there was a lot of caveats there. There was a lot of there was Call of the Mountain. That was the big flagship thing. There was Gran Turismo. That very cool stuff. And then everything else was kind of like, this is an upgraded version of a PSVR 1 game, or this is a port of a Meta Quest game, or, you know, I think a few of those were actually new, but I mean, we have our ear to the ground with this kind of stuff, and I just didn't really see that much buzz about it.
It was, I mean, so like Akeem is not here today. He's on another shoot, but he loves his. He plays his constantly, constantly getting all the new games for it, checking it out all the time, super into it. Like, I think that like what happened here, and it's everything we've kind of talked about from the jump. Like, I think that this console had a really strong launch lineup in terms of like the best of the best greatest hits of VR games. But I don't think it had like that single killer app must have game, right? Like, it doesn't have that thing that like you're like, this is why I have to drop this money. And it doesn't have a lot of those coming up either. And I think there's a lot of people like me who really like the first one, and they're kind of like taking a wait and see approach on this. And we're like, mm-hmm. where is this going to land? Like, is this, Is this going to turn into like a big thing that like they're really supporting for a long time, or is this something that's going to kind of, you know, peter out after a little while? So I will say that these numbers are significantly lower than I even expected for this. And I was like pretty cautiously optimistic about how well it would perform. But like there are what, 33 million PS5s out there right now.
Something like that, yeah.
And so you're not even looking at like one in 33 million or one in every 33 people want this thing. Like,
yeah, it's, you know, yeah, it's a smaller percentage. Like, I'm fully committed. Like, I've already bought a carrying case. I got a charging stand bought for it. Like, that stuff is all there. It's just waiting for me to, I want to be able to have time to fully dedicate it to it and give it the, like, the proper time it deserves, not just let me put this on for 10 minutes and then forget about it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's it's a difference between playing like anything in PSVR versus like Power Wash Simulator. You know what I mean? Like, I could pick up Power Wash Simulator, go wash a van.
You don't have to calibrate anything, you know? Like, VR is kind of the opposite of pick up and play. Like, you have to set up a whole thing, you got to plug something in, you got to put a thing on your head, and that's, you know, before you even get into the game and fine tune all that stuff. And, you know, that's the case for all VR in general. But, Brian, to your point, like, there's, you know, this thing kind of came out swinging with a pretty decent amount of games at launch, but what's coming down the road? Like, what's on the way? Like, I understand there not being like a really, if Horizon and Gran Turismo aren't your thing, like, okay, maybe that's not killer apps. That's killer apps for somebody. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But if you're taking a wait and see approach, you're waiting to see what they even announce, you know? It's not even waiting to see how like the thing performs. It's like, what's coming to it, you know?
Right.
It seems like there's, which is, you know, and this is a kind of a vicious cycle, because if they're like, well, we don't have much of an install base, that isn't exactly incentivizing developers to jump on board and make a brand new PSVR 2 game, you know?
Yeah, you get a very kind of chicken and egg, cart and horse thing happening here. And it's like, I don't know, look, PlayStation understands this. They launched PS5 with Miles Morales and Demon's Souls, and a little while later we started getting things like Returnal and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, now at this point we've got God of War. There's a library there.
There's Russian so much Clank, stuff. Yeah, there's so many good games.
And that was also right after one of the best years they've ever had, where they said goodbye to PS4 with The Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima. Like,
yeah,
amazing year. They launched PSVR 1 with like Arkham VR and a couple, like, it even came in with like pack-in demos and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Astro Boy, right? Like, stuff like that is like, it adds up. Nintendo Switch launched with Breath of the Wild. Like, you need a killer app from the jump to get that energy going, to get that excitement going. So now you're in a weird spot where it's like, the people who bought your system are in. Mm-hmm. They're buying games. I know. I can just tell that like the software attach rate is huge there, because people bought it. They're excited. They're like, want to make, you know, get the bang for the buck on this. And there's 100 games in development that are not out yet.
Yep.
Right. But how much of what we've seen so far and how much of what's coming, coupled with the price, the limited, lack of connectivity to PC and a bunch of other factors, are going to entice the average consumer right now. And so if you don't have that, then to Max's point, you have developers who are like, should we take a year or two and make a VR game? Should we make a VR port? Should we even take the resources to port stuff over from Quest or whatever?
And that's also, you know, the tricky part is, do these studios have the people who have the expertise in making VR yet? Because if they don't, that means now they've got to hire people, which adds a whole nother process. And then they've got to go through the whole development process of making these ports or making these games.
Yeah.
Or they outsource it to another studio that is known for doing ports. And it's 50-50 if that comes out the way they would have liked to have it come out. Like, you know, we've seen good ports, we've seen bad ports. I think the biggest thing for me that really just strikes me as odd is like, I don't think there's anybody out there who bought their PS5 and played Astros and didn't love that game.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was on our top 10 like PS5 game lists for IGN for a while. And it might still be. And it's just surprising that they didn't kind of bring that same energy for the PSVR 2. Like, that was a shoe-in. Astro was a PSVR 2 icon, or PSVR 1 icon. Mm-hmm. And now that he's nowhere to be seen for PSVR 2. So that's the biggest thing that's kind of like confounding.
Yeah, I mean, I even like doing like bringing, like, friends would come over, I put on PSVR 1 on their heads and I'd be like, hey, do the shark demo, right? Like, go into that, go do that. Mm-hmm. Like that came with like a bunch of little demos and stuff like that. There was the Resident Evil 7 demo for it and stuff, but it's like, where is Insomniac? Where is Sucker Punch? Where is Santa Monica? Like, who is making, what first party games are making, first party studios are making software for this thing?
Give me,
like,
MLB The Show in VR. Let me hit some baseballs.
Yeah, like more, you know, like if you can't get your internal devs on board, or at least like getting them announcing that they're working on something, then it, I think that like people are kind of hesitant to jump in for the long tail, because they're like, where is this going? You know, yeah. Or is this going to be okay? So I want it to succeed.
I think that the things that could really put a, you know, be a real shot in the arm for this is either put it on PC or put the PC on it. And I mean, Half-Life, yep. Alyx. Like,
yeah.
That's one of those games that is a extremely well-known, well-respected game. It was, I think, a lot of people's game of the year when it came out. But mm-hmm. again, it's locked away on a PC VR, which is a considerably higher barrier of entry. But if enough people have kind of heard of that, and it's also like, I don't know, I feel like Half-Life is an old enough franchise that it's got this kind of like reputation, and maybe older people who've got a little more disposable income are like, hell yeah, I'll check that out in VR. That sounds cool, yeah. As hell. I don't know. It's the PC thing, really. I get hung up on this because we're seeing Sony put its first party games on PC,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, okay, that's cool. You're opening that up. It's almost like you remembered that like Sony also does make PCs. that's a whole department,
right?
and it's tricky, but like I feel like if they made it available to like to use as a PC headset, that would get people to jump on it, and mm-hmm. that again would sort of, you know, cook the books enough to get maybe more developers to develop stuff for it.
The thing is that like that audience will necessarily not exactly purchase a ton of games through the PlayStation Store, but in the same way they used to give away like magazine subscriptions to boost the numbers to the advertisers, you can say to a dev, a prospective dev, this has a million person install base, 2 million person install base. You know, PSVR 1 I think hit 5 million at some point. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little higher than that, actually. And it's like interesting to me because it's like we talked about this with Suicide Squad a couple weeks ago, right? About how a lot of the stuff that we're seeing, and I believe Jason Schreier tweeted something similar recently, about how a lot of the games we see and the software we see in the games industry right now, because development cycles take so long, we are seeing the results of decisions that were made like 5-6 years ago coming, yep. into fruition now. And the ship has potentially sailed on some of these things. Like, yep. Facebook, Meta, whatever you want to call those horrible people over there, they built an entire like arm division around the metaverse, and like you know, Zuckerberg being like, they have legs now, they can walk around, and like they've pulled back significantly on that. They've lost a ton of money. They're banking hard on like VR being a way that I can say happy birthday to my aunt, and then they just were like, oh, man, that's not really going to work. You know, maybe we'll go into something else from here on out. Like now they're going to bank on AI, right? Here he is. Here's that goblin.
Anyway, this is ongoing conversation. To your point, like,
yep.
Yeah, it takes a long time to develop a game. It takes a long time to develop a piece of hardware.
Yeah.
Like, this thing was in the works a long time ago. Like, there's a lot of moving parts there. In some cases, literally, you got to figure out how to make the thing go on your head. Moving targets. It's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, but it's definitely not off to a strong start. And I really hope that, you know, Sony can turn that around, or at very least kind of, you know, give you a reason to open that box, something to look forward to play, you know.
Max, are you using moving targets as a segue to talk about Resident Evil?
I thought you were. You better do it.
So speaking of moving targets, Ada has been shooting all sorts of moving targets in the shooting gallery located below the weird town of Resident Evil, just nailing those pirates with the TMP and the...
If you haven't seen that video that we tweeted out, did you retweet that?
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
So we talked
into
about
my
that.
Profile.
We talked about that video in our, like, our internal morning meeting. This is like the whole staff at IGN. And I almost wanted to be like, yeah, Jada's on our show.
you are carrying,
we have Jada.
You are carrying, yes. our whole squad, and by whole squad I mean the entire company. Like, you're just,
oh my god,
gameplay wise,
yeah. fucking nasty. Just like,
I feel like we could throw up some B-roll over this, but yeah.
Oh my god,
yes. Yeah,
just anyway, nasty.
So let's get into this. Resident Evil 4 is out. Fuck, it's a good game. Good.
It's
game.
So good.
Oh, so I love that, like, the original back in 2005 got a 9.8
mm-hmm.
from Matt Casamassina, I think. I don't know. But it just shy of a 10 out of 10. The new one got a 10 out of 10, which, yeah. honestly, that's all made up numbers. It doesn't matter. But the point is, it's an excellent game. It is, yeah. such a good mm-hmm. game. Brian, is this your favorite game of all time?
Yes. Yeah. Like, this is the thing that constantly, like, it's sort of tied with Link's Awakening for me. Is like, and like, I call them both my favorite. Like, if it's like, if I had two children, I wouldn't pick a favorite, right? But yep. Both of those games got remakes recently, so I'm very happy about that. But
you are eating good.
I know, right? Bloodborne is number three for me, so look out, folks. Like, whatever deal with the devil I made, you will bear the fruit of that. But yeah, this is something that this is a game I am completely enamored with. I am so incredibly ecstatic that Capcom pulled this off. They gave this the care and love and respect that it deserves. They built the game that I think honors exactly and respects everything about the DNA of the original, but also creates something that I think a modern player can hop into instantly. It's gorgeous. It's scary. It's funny. It's campy. It's got everything tonally that I love about the original game has been retained here. And they've just built so much else around it. Like, there's new combat versatility that you can parry with your knife. The enemies are gorier and scarier and stuff like that. There's just so much happening here that I was like, where can this go? And like, you know, we were all kind of worried where is this going to land on the spectrum of remakes these days, right? Like, is this going to be one-to-one? Is this going to be like cut content? Are they going to redo the entire thing? I was thinking about when EA made GoldenEye. Mm. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah,
which was like...
That was like on the 360 era, right?
Yeah, like the Wii, and it was kind of like, okay.
It didn't have a soul, really.
It was it was just not really... Like, it was like...
It was GoldenEye in name only.
Yeah, like, do you remember the classic game, GoldenEye? You played with all your friends, you gathered around the TV, you put cardboard up and over the screens and stuff like that. Well, it's back through some legal dispute that we made, and now this, like, weird Frankenstein version of it exists. So there's a lot of... like pathways where this remake could have been like, they totally dropped the ball here. They totally screwed up. And I didn't feel that way at all. I felt like they built this thing that was just completely serviced the original and also modernized everything I love about it. It's just phenomenal.
When we first heard about this, it was in like a leak. It was a line item on like a top secret Capcom spreadsheet, and we were all like, no way.
Yeah.
And I remember just imagining that, and I think it was going through the RE3 remake and kind of being like, how, like, this is gonna have to be a next gen thing. Amazingly enough, it is on PS4, which is incredible. But just to try to sort of comprehend the scope of this game, because RE4 compared to like previous entries is massive.
Yeah.
There's like a true sense of like scale to it. And it's, I remember just sort of being like, it's going to have to be like, you know, there's going to be parts that are like almost open world. And sure enough, there's like a massive sprawling lake area to explore in a boat. And it's like, it's just, it's stunning how well they did this. And, you know, there is stuff that got cut out of it, which we'll talk about in a second. But like, you don't notice it, you know, because it's such, if anything, it's tightening things up. Like, it feels...
It helps with the pacing, yeah. Like, I noticed a few things that were missing, and we'll talk about that later, but it did such a great job of highlighting these other moments and making them bigger and more impactful to the story.
Yeah.
Where you don't even think about what you're not getting because you're so enamored with what you are getting.
Yeah. Yeah. And the final runtime for the average player ends up being roughly the same too, which is really interesting. Like, yeah, there's stuff that goes away, but then they added, like, there's that whole castle siege area where, like, you gotta fight a new boss with a cannon. And, you know, there's a whole, like, the lake area that Max mentioned. You do get a boat in the lake in the original one, and there's one optional cave that you can go to that most players skip. But here they're like, they baked that into the flow, and they're like, oh, you get to travel all around the lake, get out and solve a bunch of puzzles, and then do a bunch of optional side stuff.
Hit up a chicken farm, go farm up some eggs.
And you and me were messaging about, like, we were just like farming for fish. Yeah. For like an afternoon, just to like dump a couple of bucks in your guns.
I mean, I wanted to buy have my rocket launcher by like chapter 3-4 or whatnot. So
you gotta get to sell those fish.
Yep.
The thing I think is impressive is, and it's easy to sort of overlook this, is the original, you had to stop to attack, to shoot.
Like, yeah.
That's not quite tank controls, but it sure as hell slows things down.
Stop and pop, we call it.
Yeah, exactly. But like, the fact that they managed to have this be a run and gun game, like, this is a fully real-time combat situation, and it doesn't half the time it takes you to play it.
Yeah.
The amount of stuff that they added to it, the fact that the average runtime is about the same, mm-hmm. despite the fact that you are no longer having to, you can walk and chew gum at the same time.
So, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is like,
that's a good way of putting it.
And
it,
you know, again, they cut some stuff out, they sped some parts up, but at the end of the day, it flows the same way.
Yeah.
The only thing that I do wish they would have included was the ability to shoot while crouched. Because there were certain areas where I was like, man, I would love to be able to crouch underneath this branch
yep.
and snipe this
Definitely
person.
A lot of parts where I would just sort of, out of habit, you'd think you could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just, you're like, well, time to, and it's just like,
yep.
Just
yeah, I was like, oh, cool.
I do love the new stealth mechanic, though, and upgrading your knife and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of stuff that was like, you know, a thing that was there a little bit in the beginning. Like, I remember, like, my whole thing playing Resident Evil 4, the original, which I've done 100 times at this point, is I walk into the main village area with the chainsaw guy before he's there. And I make a hard left, and there's that woman with a rake, and she's just like, rah, 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 and she's just like doing like this. And right next to her is an herb, and I go up behind her and I knife her and I try to kill her before everybody else in town notices. And then I played the remake and I walk over to her and I'm like, it was like, oh, you want a stealth kill? And I was like, oh yeah, big time. So I stab her in the back of the neck, and I got like 5 or 6 kills before everybody started getting pissed off at me. And then it turns into, you know, Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. But what I love about that is like, you have a lot more options now, and all of that adds to what this game is fundamentally built around, which is replayability. Like, that's the thing that I think gets lost in a lot of the conversations about why Resident Evil 4 is so fantastic, yep. is that this is a game that pushes and inspires you to play it differently each time. So you'll beat the game, and then you get new toys. And like, the better you are at it, the better toys you unlock, the stupider those toys get. Like, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, you beat it on professional in under blah, blah, blah. You know what you get? You get cat ears and an infinite typewriter machine gun.
Yep.
And you can go shoot all those people now. You want an infinite rocket launcher? Well, you've been such a good kid,
you
killing everybody.
All your money.
You get to be Wile E. Coyote for the next 20 hours.
This is true of all the Resident Evil games.
Yeah.
The first time around is a haunted house. The second time around is a
fun house.
Yeah, exactly. It's a shooting gallery. It's like the surprises and scares aren't there anymore. Like, yep. you know what's coming. So they're just like, all right, well, now you are dressed like a 1920s gangster and you have an infinite rocket launcher. Okay, go nuts. Have fun.
And you did your initial run like dressed as Prince, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. They had those little costumes. Oh, God, I love this game so much.
Yeah.
The thing that they kept hitting me over the head is like the original, like, I didn't play it when it first came out, so I can't speak to how realistic it felt then.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to it, it has that kind of, you know, it has that kind of GameCube haze to it. Like, it feels like a video game. It looks like a video game. So all this video gamey stuff you do throughout the course of the game doesn't feel out of place. In this case, it's like almost photorealistic. It is like, it is stunningly good looking.
It looks so good, yeah.
And the fact that like it's like the theatrical the romantic costume.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's also got some like Oakleys on, so he just looks like Prince, you know. He's like, you must purify yourself in the Las Plagas of Lake Villalobos or whatever.
Yep.
When he meets Ashley, she's wearing like this absurd like scene kit outfit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
this like gorgeous, incredible cutscene. I don't think Capcom gets enough credit for how good the cutscenes look, and they do all that, like they block all that stuff out with like action figures. I love that stuff, but seeing it at this fidelity just makes me, it blew my mind. It made me mm-hmm. realize that like how much I would love to see that option in movies, where if you could pay like an extra $5, the costumes are extra dumb.
Oh my God.
And it was just, it's so,
need
it's
that for
so
bonus
funny.
Features.
Like,
yeah.
But that fine line of like, this is scary, but also it's pretty stupid and silly. And mm-hmm. like there's, you know, arbitrary backflips and suplexes. And as like someone who was kind of a scaredy cat growing up, like I definitely was like, that's what warded me off of this the first time around.
Right.
And you know, I eventually got to it. Like, this isn't that scary. This is actually incredibly funny, but it is like, it is really funny that you get, I don't know, like there's like someone terrifying coming at you with a knife and then you suplex them. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
I was on don't get mad at me. I was on Podcast Unlocked this week. The Xbox show we do here. I'm a traitor. I know. And one of the things I mentioned there is that like, this is a really tough balance is horror and comedy, because both of those things are incredibly subjective.
Yep.
And so much of Resident Evil's DNA is campiness, and it's also gory, violent terror, right? And when I saw this game to begin with, I was like, this is going to be, they're going to go full, like kind of mature, gritty horror. But then Leon has tons of goofy, silly one-liners in this game, and they were able to retain that. And I'm really happy that they didn't lose that side of it, because it's so it's so integral to the DNA of this game. And I think that a lot of people, you know, might balk at that. Like when jokes show up in Star Wars now, there's a lot of people that are like, why is comedy in Star Wars? And it's like, well, it's kind of always been there, so it's not really a big deal. But I think a lot of people now, like, they want horror to be scary, and they want comedies to be comedies, and they don't want the, you know, the peas and carrots to mix or whatever.
This is a thing that I honestly think, like, Japanese media does better than anything else. Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, it's weird, like, because, you know, you look at something like Evangelion, which is the closest thing to an animated nervous breakdown that's ever been made. And it's about the end of the world, and it's extremely messed up, and it's very dark. But also, there's a penguin who lives in the refrigerator.
Yeah. And, like, or Metal Gear, right?
Metal Gear,
yeah.
Exactly. It's about the horrors of war. And it's completely nightmarish. But also, you can put, like, bikini girls on your cardboard box.
Yeah.
And you can get a recording of diarrhea, and the guard thinks you're in the bathroom.
It's, like, great. It's just,
there's always that, like, and I mean, the Yakuza series does this really well, too. Yep. And it's this funny thing where it's kind of compartmentalizing, like, very serious main story, but also completely ridiculous thing on the side. Mm-hmm. And, like, the way this one managed to nail that, you know, like the original does, I think it really just accentuated how wonderfully, like, silly that is. And I love it.
I think what really delighted me about the moment-to-moment of, like, kind of playing through this game for the very first time was every single time I turned a corner and I was like, yeah, I know this part. I know what's going to happen.
Yep.
Something would be rearranged or remixed or cut and swapped, or mm-hmm. they'd spit you out at the back of a area instead of, like, the front of
the
area.
Yeah, there were so many, like, rearranging of, like, how you just get to places.
The part in the original game where you, like, in the opening, or right past the opening village, where you have to put those two emblems together and there's, like, the bridges and stuff, yep, like that. Mm-hmm. That whole thing now, like, they start you at a different door of it.
Yep.
And so when I walked through there, I was like,
I think you had to walk through, like, a cave or something in the original, and then you came out. Yeah.
Yep. And now it's completely reworked. So there was so much of that, like, I know what's going to happen next. I know this, like, the back of my hand, and it would totally turn it on my head. And I love that, just constantly kept me on my toes. It was so cool.
I can't remember in the original, that drawbridge that's there, could you shoot that out and break?
No.
So, yeah. I didn't realize that on my first playthrough, because I was going through, like, handgun and knife piece, like, and bolt thrower for, like, pretty much only weapons I used for, like, most of it. And then I got through my second playthrough and I bought my infinite rocket launcher at the start of chapter 2. Mm-hmm. And I like fired at somebody on the bridge and the bridge just collapsed. I was like, that can happen now?
There was a video, like, going around on Twitter where, like, there's somebody playing as Leon and they shoot a villager in the head just as he throws one of those firecracker dynamites over his head. And the villager dies and you're like, all right, he did it. And then the thing blows up behind him, the bridge collapses, and Leon just falls. And it's,
oh,
like, just,
my goodness. Yeah.
Again, extremely Looney Tunes.
It's very, you know? Looney Tunes.
I might have shot the bridge out from under myself. I had a weird thing where, like, there's all those blue medallions scattered around.
Yeah.
I got one of those by accident while shooting at a guy, and it was just like, ding! And I was like, what? Okay.
I love the blue medallions and, like, how they kind of updated it and used them for this.
The side quests.
Like, can we agree that the merchant is maybe the best character in video games?
Oh my God, I love 100%. Him so much.
I love his, he makes no sense. The fact that you fight your way through the most horrifying, just arduous thing, and you go around a corner, he's like, oh, I guess I better get back to work.
Yeah, break time's, like, over.
We love our herbs. It's, we, like, do. Heal a man, kill a man.
Did they try to kill you before you were setting up your folding table?
Yeah.
It's so
good. He's got his, like, weird little purple lizard fingers and stuff.
I mean,
like,
to be fair, he's the one we buy all our guns for, so I'm sure he's packing, so like I'm sure
he's probably selling them pitchforks and stuff.
He says that thing early on about how he'll sell you back your stuff, like, at market cost or whatever. He's like, I just want to see you do well, you know. Yep. Like, there's that, like, line of encouragement.
I love him so much.
He's so good.
Gun rhymes with fun for a reason.
I went into one of his rooms and he was like, gun rhymes with welcome. I was like, that doesn't rhyme. Like, wait, does it? Does gun rhyme?
Do you ever see that thing where you run up on him too fast and his line of dialogue doesn't pop up? Like, you just run in and it's just like, oh. Or he goes, break time's over, I suppose.
He's the best.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue.
The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Yeah, so I want to talk about this, Brian. You know the original game,
yes,
in the back of your hand, and there are like a lot of subtle differences. And you prepared a nice list of things that are have been changed.
I did, yeah. So Resident Evil 4 Remake might be the best video game remake ever made. As you know, it completely overhauls the graphics and sound, fine tunes the gameplay, adds a ton of awesome quality of life features, reworks entire chunks of the 2005 game with brand new environments, items, bosses. But, and I gotta say it, also loses a couple of set pieces and conflicts from the original game along the way. So here are 5 big scenes that got cut from RE4 Remake. If you're still loving the remake, but you're still nostalgic for some classic scenes that got the axe, well, I got something that might interest you. Number 1, the U3 boss fight. This tense, terrifying dual phase boss fight against like a bald monster that looks like Frieza from Dragon Ball fucked a scorpion is no longer in the game, along with the falling shipping container storage unit that you battle him in, nor is the second section afterwards where he chases you around a large figure eight shaped area, smashing through doors and exploding oil drums. It's kind of a bummer because like I would have loved to see how this looked in the modern RE engine. They did such a good job of modernizing all these monsters, but it seems that when U3 died in 2005, he died for good. Maybe he'll pop up in Mercenaries. Number 2, the Castle Dragon Room. In 2023's Resident Evil 4, you still go searching for stone animal body parts to open a door in the castle section, but the way you collect them has been reworked entirely from the original. The 2005 version had you enter a long lava-filled hall called the Dragon Room, where huge fire-breathing dragon statues attempted to burn you to death while you tried to reach a treasure chest on the other side of the room. You had to shoot their little chains that were hanging up on them. I think we have a picture of it. This was one of the most visually distinct areas in the entire game, so it's definitely kind of a bummer that it's gone. I really liked this room. Mm. It was there was like a closet that just dropped bad guys. It was like one of those like you know monster factories. Number 3, Tiny Salazar's huge stone mech chase sequence. Salazar is a funny little villain with a Napoleon complex and a Napoleon hat. So to compensate for his lack of loftiness, he built a gigantic stone mech version of himself who chases you full speed over crumbling bridges while trying to stomp you to death. In Resident Evil 4 Remake, his big stone mech is still there, but it's stuck surrounded by scaffolding. And he does try to kill you with a fire breathing, but you can shoot the back of his neck and his head will explode. So, like, I don't know if they're building a version of him that will eventually run away.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I missed that. I dodged all the fire.
You know, that was it. Yeah.
I let the fire burn all my enemies, and then I ran
through. That's good, too.
I feel like he made that like, this is the realism they've added, is he made the demand, like, make me a little stone mech. I want to stomp around it. And they were like, we'll try.
We're working on it.
They're like, it's kind of impossible. We're not going to make a stone Gundam for this dude. Like,
yeah.
You know what? With Leon being able to move and shoot, that just means he got there faster before they could finish development.
Yeah. And so they got rid of that entire section, and it's kind of a bummer, because, like, I think people were like, is this part going to be there? And the answer was like, yes, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, the game's awesome, right? Like, I love it. But like, it is worth pointing out that the original game does have a giant robot rock Napoleon that chases
a giant stone little boy robot.
Yeah. And what's really funny about that scene, again, extremely Looney Tunes, is that you run full speed through that, and there's a locked door at the end. So Leon's like running and you're like jamming on buttons, right? It's all QTE based. You're hitting sprint over and over and over. And on professional, it's such a pain in the ass because you have to double your speed. And you get to this little door and it's just locked, and you get your little knife out and you king, 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 or you can shoot it. And then the Salazar robot just Kool-Aid mans through that entire wall, and you jump over a bridge. So that's great. Next, the ski lift gondola section. So Batoraz Mendez, who looks like the Undertaker, is like a tall, annoying man, frequent pain in the ass to Leon. So it's only natural that the only way to get to his house is by riding a fucking ski lift while a dozen of his grandfatherly henchmen try to shoot to death.
Photoshop.
Like this. Yeah, there we go. This whole section is gone now, and it's weird because in Resident Evil 4 Remake, behind the house where you have the standoff with Luis, there is a ski lift, right? It's like a derelict, shut down gondola, whatever, a sky ride, whatever you want to call those things. So it's there, but it's just not operable.
Why was it there?
I don't know.
Were they trying to like do like a vacation destination thing?
It's weird. So maybe like if they do a Simon Ada, they'll throw it in there. Next, the Ashley Graham Bulldozer Simulator 2005 sequence. So through most of Resident Evil 4, kidnap president's daughter and recent flip phone demolisher Ashley Graham requires constant protection and help from her rescuer, Leon S. Kennedy. That is, until she gets her hand on the steering wheel of a large bulldozer, starts tearing ass through a remote island off the coast of Spain. Throughout this demolition derby, Leon rides flatbed, you know, gunning down murderous attackers, fending off grabby psychopaths, while Ashley smashes through walls, hitchhikers, bridges, all this fun stuff. This whole sequence, not making the trip to 2023, kind of sucks a bit, because like big trucks are always fun in video games, you know, shout out to Uncharted. But it didn't make it here, so it's a little odd. They also removed, there's a sequence where a truck comes down right before you go to the castle.
Yep.
And they got rid of that too, which is interesting.
Did the original have the wrecking ball sequence?
No.
No. Okay. The wrecking ball is what replaced it.
So they have a new truck.
Yeah.
So Ashley was doing like, I don't know, trade school for trucks.
Yeah, she got a new like big construction toy. And finally, the laser room. So for a game where you kill a guy with a burlap sack and get stabbed by pitchforks and punch open, you know, crates of snakes behind an abandoned barn, there's actually like a surprising amount of high-tech shit in this game that also tries to kill you. So the 2005 version of the game had this thing called the laser room, which was a long hallway that led to a small throne room that protected Osmond Sadler's cool gamer chair that you get to sit in. This was directly inspired by the first Resident Evil movie that came out 3 years before that. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yep.
But there's a scene in that movie where this dude Colin Salmon, who's an actor who also gets killed in a Paul W.S. Anderson movie, Alien vs. Predator, almost in a similar way, he gets cleanly sliced to pieces by all these lasers coming in. Leon's too cool for that shit, obviously. He does backflips, he survives and everything. But this
Catherine Zeta-Jones,
exactly. So they took this hallway out, and like, it's a dumb scene, right? And again, it's almost entirely QTE based. Maybe it didn't work with the mechanics that they built into the game, but it's gone. These lasers were left on the cutting room floor, as they say. So there you have it, Resident Evil 4 Remake. Hell of a ride, but it did dump some precious cargo along the way. Either way, we now have two awesome versions of RE4 to play whenever we want, not to mention the countless other ports, HD remasters, VR versions. It's on iPhone at some point.
You play it everywhere.
Play it everywhere.
Put it on the TI-83.
Yeah. So yeah, pour one out for the scenes we lost in RE4.
So yeah, you know Resident Evil 4 pretty well, right?
I do.
Just a little bit. You know.
Jada, you know it pretty well, too?
Yeah, it's a hobby.
Well, how well do you think you could recognize the sounds of it?
Ooh.
Not at all.
We're going to play a little game called, what was that noise?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Love it. Special sound effects pulled from Resident Evil 4. This is from the original, so if you've been too accustomed to the remaster, I'm going to throw you for a loop here. But then again, you've had, what, 18 years to memorize the noises. Let's do the first one. I think it's too easy.
Okay.
Let's give it a listen. You hear that?
It's a sound of silence.
Yeah.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Mm-hmm. That is a
beautiful... Any second now. We're going to go at the noise.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's when you combine herbs. Or
yes.
Really
that's
select
combining
any,
anything.
Yeah,
that's
selecting anything in the inventory.
Or just you could also just pick it up. It's the sound of herbs. I don't know how they landed on that noise. I don't know what that's supposed to be. I think it's one of the least herbal sounds I've ever heard.
We love our herbs. We do.
Yeah. But yeah, here it's. Just,
oh yeah,
there we go. All right, so that was kind of. I feel like that was too easy. You hear that constantly.
I like that one. Yeah,
little potted plants. Just go into the corner, mixing them together, little vials. It's weird. The president's daughter doesn't think anything of that. All right, next. I feel like this is a little bit more specific. Let's hear a snippet of that.
That would be Leon doing his roundhouse kick,
or jumping out of a window.
Ding 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 ding!
Yeah.
Ding. Wow, you're okay. You've heard this enough times. Here's the full version. Okay, here's one final one. I feel like this is an extra tricky one.
Ooh. Is that a regenerator?
Nope.
What is that?
I have no idea. It sounds like. Like there's obviously some type of steam or something going off. It almost sounds like the cold showers that was
in
the remake, but
what were they in the original?
I don't remember. It's
would do you think it was something that sounded like this, maybe?
I was right, it was so I think it's gonna write it down. Yes.
Oh, you had it.
Yeah.
So close. It was so it is the sound of
the
what is it? Liquid nitrogen tanks getting knocked over
when you fight Verdugo.
Yeah,
or whatever.
To get Verdugo
all cold.
Yeah.
Give him
I was like, I knew it sounded like some type of steam, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah, you get them all frosty and then you beat the shit out of them.
Yeah. I forgot that you literally just kicked the liquid nitrogen tanks.
Yeah.
Like, and now it's like
now
a cold shower.
It's all baked into the door. It's, you know, completely. It's
I kind of miss when Leon would do like a flip kick and be like, yeah, and then just kick something on the ground.
Anyway, so yeah, you
that was good. That was a deep cut, Max.
You both know that Verdugo, man. That's the thing that I'm like, oh, they're going to make this game. Oh, no, I have to fight him again. I hate that guy. He's
I loved the whole sequence leading up to him, too.
Oh, it was so good.
You noticed something really funny about that, right? The area leading up to him, there was like something. It was
we
like
we were talking about like how filthy it was.
It was
down
a bottle
there.
Of bleach.
Yeah,
yeah. It was like spray cleaner. Yeah,
so there's a part where you're like going through a bunch of tunnels and stuff, and I love it. It's like the most disgusting, gross part of. I mean, it's a Resident Evil game. It's I think second grossest maybe to the house in seven, or whatever. And you go around a corner, like right before the merchant, there's just like a cleaning bottle solution spray bottle just sitting there, and it's like, who's using that?
Yeah,
is it like putting out cleaning supplies to make people think that you cleaned your house before they came over? Like
well, that's like they
oh,
like
just in the middle of mopping. Yeah, it's like no, you weren't.
You unlock like COVID masks in this game.
Yeah,
and it's like well, canonically, like the main characters get shot up with the virus like 10 minutes in. Yeah. So
it's injected.
I don't know if the mask is going to help much.
Maybe it'll prevent them from spreading it to other people.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's what the masks are for.
They're that's true.
Leon and Ashley from spreading it to the other. Non-infected villagers.
I don't know.
of which there are any? Are there any?
I don't think there are.
Yeah.
So, I wrote a whole column for IGN about sort of just the different monsters in the game, and specifically how like I love like everything. You know, what is it? Imitation is the purest form of flattery, and also there are no new ideas. Like everything comes from something, whether intentional or not.
Yep.
It's how it goes, and I feel like there's a lot of just horror movie DNA in RE4.
Mm-hmm.
It's from everywhere, and I love it for that. And replaying this, I feel like it really kind of hit me in the face. And the thing that occurred to me is something that jumped out at me when this game first came out, and I think I was just looking at like posters and action figures and stuff because I thought I was too scared to play it. And the thing that was very odd is like previous RE stuff. You're like, oh, there's like it's like zombies and there's like mutant stuff. It all kind of made sense. And then this one, I'd see you know Dr. Salvador. Who's basically Leatherface, and then I would see like the Verdugo, which is the Xenomorph, and I'm like, how do you connect these two?
Yeah,
like, how are they related? Like, how is there any connective tissue there? And the answer is that it's all the parasites. Like,
yeah.
that's which is a wonderful like narrative leap of faith there that they're able to do that. And it's funny because there's like there's so many like the Las Plagas themselves, they look like they look just like facehuggers.
Yeah.
They're
from
like,
aliens.
They're just facehuggers from Alien. But then at the same time you see them basically get sort of evolved up into the Verdugo, which is like the original alien xenomorph. It's like following you around in like big industrial hallways.
Got a long whipping tail.
And then flip side you've got the what are they called? The I forget the name, but they're the bugs. They're just, they live in the hive.
Right.
Oh, the, starts with an N, like Novizadors, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are like aliens from Aliens. And it's funny because there's all these little bits and pieces. And I was just kind of picking this apart and really thinking on it. And then of course, obviously there's The Thing, the John Carpenter movie where, you know, there's a few parts in that where like The Thing gets sort of cornered and it just tentacles explode out of somebody's head and someone recognizably human goes into something very demonstrably non-human.
Yeah.
And that happens left and right here. And I
happens
love
it to the
so
dogs,
much.
Right? Like the dogs now, like, and I think they went even harder with it this time around too, with like the sort of like the tentacles that pop out of like specific characters' heads and stuff. Like it's awesome.
Yeah. No, I absolutely adore it. But I actually kind of stumbled upon a couple things that are, I feel like lesser known Resident Evil influences. One of them, I was poking around. There is a 2001 Stuart Gordon movie called Dagon, which is an adaptation of a couple different H.P. Lovecraft stories that are kind of like congealed into one. But it's definitely more of a Shadow over Innsmouth story, which is that's a weird novella about a dude who goes to this town and it's full of like horrible fish people. And in the movie that they made, it was a Spanish production. So they changed Innsmouth to Imboca, which is instead of like mouth, it's like mouth in Spanish. And it was shot in this Spanish fishing town. And that is where the Spanish villagers from RE4 came from. Like, it is like mobs of these dudes. And it's eerie how similar so much of this is to like beats you run into in Resident Evil. It also is like in that sort of 2001 era, they've got these like these logos for the cult that they're in. It's supposed to be like the Dagon. They worship this like Dagon, you know, undersea old one beast kind of thing. But it's got this like vaguely try hard kind of tribal aesthetic to it, which is just the same as the Las Plagas logo, where they've got these like it just looks like a little too tribal tattoo.
Yeah.
It's got too many pointy edges. It looks like the Unreal Tournament logo. You know, it's just like a little bit it's got that like late 90s spikiness to it.
It's also got this like occasional jumps of really bad CG, which is really funny. Like Max and I both watched this movie over the week and it's like, it's interesting because it's like a blonde woman gets kidnapped by a religious cult and they're, you know, they worship like monsters and there's villagers that chase you around, but the protagonist is a lot more Resident Evil. He's a lot more Ethan than he is Leon.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever had anybody this dweeby as like a protagonist. He's just this. He's like, excuse me. He's like trying to. He's trying to speak Spanish the whole time and just completely.
Oh God! Don't estar la biblioteca.
Yeah, I love it. But it's funny that like it wasn't the original story that influenced like Resident Evil. It was like this specific movie, and it's like why Spain? Like that always seemed kind of odd for Resident Evil, and it's like I'm honestly trying to kind of roll that back. And I guess if you were to try to do the authentic Lovecraftian, you know, fishing village, it would be a little weird if there was also like a random miniature aristocrat in a castle. But I feel like in Spain, you can be like, no, there's that checks out. There, it's Spain was there in medieval times. Of course, there's a castle, whereas you'd have to be like a Rockefeller mansion in New England or something. It doesn't quite fit.
And now, like with Resident Evil Village, it's like they've given people like that bridge again, right? Like they're like, like part of contemporary Resident Evil is folk horror and castles now. Like that's part of the language that modern Resident Evil fans know. And so seeing that in Resident Evil 4 again, you know, which originated in 2005, is so awesome because it just means that like castles are now an important part of Resident Evil, just like mansions are.
Yep.
Great.
I mean, it's funny. You send like a secret agent to go rescue the president's daughter and he's in a castle. It just, it's just kind of off in a way that makes it especially charming. And again, like
it's Baby Condor. We don't say her full name, except for in the first cutscene with Hunnigan when we're like, Baby Condor, the president's daughter. And she's like, so, fucking idiot.
Can I say the one thing I loved about playing this on PS5, you didn't get this because you're playing on Xbox, right? Is that anytime you get a call on comms, the only volume comes from your controller.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so like, it's lower volume because I had my settings down, so every time like Hunnigan called or Luis called, I literally would have to be like, hey, what's up? And I'm just like, literally they're like speaking into my ear like I'm on the phone. My partner looked at me weird every time I did it.
I don't know if you know this about me, I've bought pretty much every version of Resident Evil 4, so I might double dip on this one just to do that.
It's special. So great.
About video games is that they often predate what's common technology, and like in like Resident Evil and in Metal Gear Solid, people are constantly FaceTiming you.
Yeah,
I was like, hey, what's going on? It's me. I got to talk to you about the president's thought. It's me, Otacon, whatever. And it's like, that's in the same way that like the sort of navigation system in GTA predated everyone having GPS.
Right, yep. Right.
There's stuff that seems like it seemed kind of futuristic at the time, and now you're just like, if somebody FaceTimed me when I was out doing something, I'm like, no, I'm not going to talk to you right now.
Well, it's
couldn't this have been a text? You know,
the thing is, like,
could have totally been like, hey, the helicopter is running late. You know,
yeah. I love how helicopter Mike sounds like Terrence and Philip this time around. By the way, he's like, hey guys, I'm coming on the way over there. I don't know a great bar we can go hang out in. It's great. But they're like this. They kept the game in 2005.
Yeah,
like when Ashley sees her smashed flip phone, yep. And she's like, I just bought that phone. It's like this crappy phone from 2005.
So
like it has like Snake on it.
Yep.
And then later in the game, like you start seeing like Computer Labs and stuff like that, and there's just all these crappy early 2000s PCs.
It's such a good touch.
It's so good.
No, I just adore this game. It was so much fun talking about it with you guys.
It's
a really good time. We can honestly keep going for probably another hour. Let us know.
We'll definitely keep talking about this game.
I think we'll be coming back to it. We'll have some more to talk about next week. But yeah, if anyone's looking for some sort of Resident Evil 4 homework, check out Dagon. Also, the Deep Rising. Steven Summers, who did like The Mummy and stuff like that.
Right.
That has a lot of monster tentacles in it, but also some wacky jet ski action, which I feel like will kind of hit you in the face as how much Resident Evil 4 might have. Mm-hmm. Cribbed a little bit from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, go check out the column. It's a little more coherent than me trying to talk off the top of my head. One thing we did figure out, I don't know if anyone knows this, I feel like this could be a little good public service announcement. If you feel like there's one major thing missing from Resident Evil 4, which is the announcer on the title screen going, Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm.
You can get that for the low price of $10 by upgrading to the deluxe version and then switching on the original soundtrack.
I love this game so much, but I don't know if I can spend $10 for that one thing. I mean, it comes with a bunch of other stuff.
Silly costumes.
You do get silly costumes, well, so it might be worthwhile for me.
It was $20 for all of the DLC in a bundle, and I got a like early review code, and I played through the game 4 times before launch, and I was like, this is the least I can do is buy this, and I would have done it anyway. But I like the run I'm on right now is with all of the original soundtrack stuff on, and a lot of it's really, really cool. A lot of the new soundtrack is really cool, but it is a minor annoyance that like the second we're in a Slack channel for Resident Evil 4 before the game came out, right? And we're still in there. And I almost like Slacked everyone at IGN playing this game before the game was out. And I was like, who's reviewing this game? And are you or are you not removing an entire point because the game doesn't yell the name of the game at you at the title screen?
It's rude. I think it's
very rude.
It should introduce itself.
Yeah.
Pokemon shouts the name of itself. I usually just go Max when I walk into a room. I think a video game should shout its own name at you.
Yeah. So, but you know, let me clarify, like the $10-$20 for the DLC, that's not a big deal. Like I would love to spend it. It's kind of a principle thing for me. Like the fact that like every Resident Evil game basically has always said Resident Evil.
Yep.
And then this one just, it's like, no, we want you to pay for that. I'm like, that's kind of a staple.
I like
it's
to
a
think that the voice actor had it. He like, he was really expensive. They couldn't get him back and they have to give him $10 of every sale of the game. And they're like, yep.
This, you know, if that's a true story, I would support that.
Not, I don't want
I would
that.
Support
I'm also
that.
Like, I'm such a little fucking hypocrite shit pig about this stuff because it's like, when I see a lot of like DLC microtransaction horse armor garbage in games, I'm like, I don't need any of that. And Resident Evil 4 came around and I was just like, oh, I can dress him like a theater actor and change the music a little bit.
In the grand scheme of things, I've spent an extra $10 on much dumber stuff like food on an airplane or something, but like to get the two characters dressed like thespians is such a treat. And
the deluxe version also puts these like ornate like Macy's gift boxes all over the map.
I heard about that. Yeah.
Like have Ashley wigs and sunglasses and COVID masks for Leon and stuff like that. So like it actually adds more stuff that is not in the base game that isn't actually sold under like you get the costumes and stuff like that. But like the run I'm on right now, like Ashley has blue hair and you can only get that through this extra version and they add extra little treasure chests everywhere. And it's like, I don't know if that's if I entirely agree with that. I'll straight up say to the camera right now, like if this was any other game, I would be pissed about it and I'd be chastising it and I'd be like, that's not right. With Resident Evil 4, I'm just a little piglet and I want to roll around in the mud and get it.
And I think that's an important like kind of point to make around just DLC in general.
Yeah.
Like lots of DLCs are not going to sell to everybody because it is a little ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But for the games that we love and are super passionate about, like, we're more open to spending that money.
We're whales.
Yeah.
We're Del Lago's, the big lake.
Yes, and I think that's totally fine for games that you're very passionate yep. about, as long as it doesn't become a habit of, like, where I need to do it for every single game. Mm-hmm. That I want to play. I play too many games. You know, I would not be able to afford living in the city anymore.
Collector's edition should be reserved for Game of the Year editions. It is stupid yes. that you I mean, people do this all the time where they shell out like $100+ for like a very special bonus version that has like a statue and a cloth map and all that. But it's for a game you haven't played yet. And like I always see this like Assassin's Creed where it's like I haven't met this character yet. Like I'm not gonna, and you know, people collect them. I get it. That's the point. Mm-hmm. But like I'd be so much more inclined to jump on that if it was like, oh, here's the game with all of its DLC. It's also got some new bonus stuff, and you can get the special collector's edition. It's like, oh, I already beat the game, but I want that statue. Like,
I want that statue. Yeah. Speaking of which, that collector's edition was on sale for 4 minutes on GameStop in October. It sold out. They canceled in-store pre-orders. They delivered on the digital pre-orders, but it never went anywhere else. And I don't have. I just want that Leon statue.
Yeah.
If anybody has that Leon statue and they don't want it, I will buy it off of you. Please hit me up. I just want that boy in my office. You know. I want to see him when I walk in. No, he's protecting my other action figures.
I hope we get some new toys.
Your point about like collector's editions coming out later, you know what I would like to see? Like, I would also like to see a version of that collector's edition where it doesn't include the base game, so it's a little bit cheaper.
Right.
But it does include all the deluxe DLC and all the season passes and stuff like that with the statue and stuff. Because if I've already shelled out $60 for this game, $60, $70 for these games, I don't want to spend... I don't need a second copy of this game. I don't need a second copy. Yes, I could give it to a friend. Sweet. I can be altruistic. Do it like that, but yeah. I would also like to maybe save, you know, $30-$40 on this collector's edition.
Was that the collector's edition on eBay for $600?
Yeah,
man, middle fingers.
What a time to be alive. But hey,
Capcom, come on, man.
For $10, the game can shout its own name at you, and you can also dress up like Prince. Everyone,
let me spend money on your shit. I'll do it. Put it in a store. Put it on Amazon. But
let
put
me
it back
give you
in
money.
Inside. Make more of them.
We are about at time. We got plenty more to talk about next week, and also we're still waiting on. Mercenaries mode, which is coming on April 7th, which is what, like a week from...
Oh, man.
Yes!
Like that. Gosh, that's a week away.
You know, murmurs about Ada Wong's Separate Ways, Worlds Apart, whatever it's called, whatever Journey song is you know, that's coming. Maybe, I hope that comes out. Maybe there's like a laser in it. Who knows? Maybe U3 is going to show up. Maybe we're going to fight that horrible scorpion
king
once again. But on that note, thank you both for hanging out.
Yeah.
Of course.
Thanks to everybody who watched and listened at home. Sorry for any technical hiccups. Sometimes we leave the door open and it's just trouble comes right in that door. We'll see you next week. Beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond, stranger.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.